Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Today on our show, hear about a new lawsuit filed by environmentalists seeking to block the controversial Finita Ranch project after Santee's City Council approved yet another revised version of the massive housing plan. If you need health insurance, Covered California's open enrollment starts November 1st, and we'll have details. We've been airing interviews with La Mesa City Council candidates on recent shows, and today our newsmaker interview is with Pastor Tony Orlando, one of the four candidates in that important race. And finally, hear about a case before the U.S. Supreme Court that threatens the Federal Clean Water Act. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Four environmental groups, led by Preserve Wild Santee, have filed a lawsuit seeking to overturn Santee's approval last month of Finita Ranch, the 3,000-unit residential project that's been hotly contested for decades. In the suit filed in San Diego Superior Court, the groups say the city violated state laws governing new development as well as city and state election codes. Plaintiffs also contend that a revised Environmental Impact Report, or EIR, is still inadequate, especially regarding lack of adequate evacuation routes in case of a major wildfire. On September 14th, the Santee City Council approved Finita Ranch 4-0, with Councilman McNellis recusing himself because the project would benefit his property. The council used a new law it passed in August 2021 called the Santee Essential Housing Program as the legal basis for this approval. The law provides a system where new development projects can get construction permits in an expedited fashion if they earn minimum points for things like affordable housing, reduced greenhouse gas emissions, water and air quality, recreation and park enhancement. The council's approval of Finita Ranch bypassed Measure N. That's a referendum that was approved by the majority of Santee voters in 2020. It required any new project that involves a change to the general plan to go on the ballot. Van Collinsworth, director of Preserve Wild Santee, an environmental and political action group, says the council created this new law for the sole purpose of circumventing a public vote on Finita Ranch. He says, essentially, the city made up a law that says they can break the law, so let's face them in court. We need to find out what the court will rule on that because it has implications well beyond Santee. The lawsuit argues that because the 2,600 acres north of Santee Lakes, where Finita Ranch is planned, is in a very high fire hazard severity zone, it makes no sense to build 3,000 homes that would bring in about 10,000 new residents. Peter Broderick, an attorney at the Center for Biological Diversity, says California's affordable housing crisis doesn't give cities free rein to build unsafe homes in places like Finita Ranch. To prepare for the next disaster, he says, we have to be smarter about where we build, with safety plans that account for the realities of fast-moving fires. Broderick says the project also should be denied because it would have a significant negative impact on the area's natural habitat and further endanger several species, including the Kino checkerspot butterfly, California gnatcatcher, and Crotch's bumblebee. The Santee City Council originally approved Finita Ranch in 2020. To entice support, developer Home Fed promised it would pay for significant highway and road improvements before the first owners moved in. The approval triggered a voters' referendum challenging the decision, which qualified to be put to a public vote. But after the council put the project on the ballot for this November, a judge ruled the project's EIR was inadequate due to those lack of evacuation routes, and it ordered the city to rescind the earlier approval. Using that ruling, the council determined a vote was unnecessary because there really wasn't a project to vote on, and it pulled the measure from the ballot. And then, at the September meeting, where the revised version of the project was approved by the city council, Mayor John Minto said Home Fed followed the law, and we follow the law, and now we have a project. Mayor Minto also predicted the council's decision would be challenged. A call and text to the mayor requesting comment for this story was not returned. Vice Mayor Ron Hall says the lawsuit is not a surprise to anybody and lamented that California mandates cities provide housing, and then when a city complies, it gets sued. Told that the suit calls out the EIR's inadequacy, again notably on the extent of impacts from a fire, Hall says the city relied on experts who advised the city on evacuation plans and other parts of that environmental impact report. Now it's up to the court to agree or disagree on the adequacy. Hall says he's open to hearing alternative solutions on what to do with Finita Ranch, including, potentially, retaining it as a recreational preserve if a viable plan is presented. Hall says, "I'm not sold on Finita Ranch, never have been, although he's voted for it," adding, "Frankly, if it does go away, I have no problem with that." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This year's open enrollment period for health insurance is right around the corner, starting in 2 weeks on November 1st. Some employer-based health plans start their open enrollment even earlier. People looking for insurance on the individual market can go to the Covered California website, coveredca.com. James Scaleri, a spokesperson for the state's health insurance marketplace, says people might be surprised by the choices they find.
Many consumers are finding out that if they weren't eligible before, now they are. Or if they got a small subsidy a few years ago, that's increased. So coverage may be more affordable than they thought. So really, regardless of your income, check out your options and see whether or not you can lower your monthly premiums.
In California, the projected average premium for 2022 was $581 a month, a 1.8% increase over 2021, according to acasignups.net. But almost 90% of people who get their health insurance through Covered California get subsidies to bring down their monthly bill. The subsidies began with the Biden administration's American Rescue Plan, and the new Inflation Reduction Act has extended them for another 3 years. Dr. Rhonda Randall, Chief Medical Officer at UnitedHealthcare, encourages people to consider their family's unique needs when choosing a plan.
Some things to consider are prescription drug benefits, mental health coverage, specialty benefits, things like dental, vision, hearing, critical illness insurance, and wellness programs.
This year, 13 insurers are participating in the Covered California Exchange. That means people in all counties will have a choice of at least two plans, and 81% can choose from four or more plans. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers.
This is Henry Migala with East County Magazine, here with Tony Orlando, who is running for one of the 2 seats on the La Mesa City Council. Tony Orlando is a La Mesa City Commissioner currently serving on the city's Personnel Appeals Board. In addition, Tony is also the pastor of Life Point Church. Tony, thank you for making time and joining us today.
Henry, thank you so much for having me. I'm honored.
So I mentioned just a little bit about your background, but please tell us about your background. How did you get here, and what motivated you to run for the La Mesa City Council?
That's a great question. Yeah, I've grown up in East County, so I'm an East County for life guy. I relocated to the Bay Area for a little bit for college and then came back 20 years ago. My wife and I have lived here in La Mesa for 21 years, and we've, you know, raised our kids here. We shop here. We do everything here. You know, we've done so many things apart. We've actually planted a church here. Our church started actually 10 years ago this last month, really in the Lake Murray area of La Mesa. And then we are now in the downtown village area 10 years later. So probably to answer your question, too, as far as like what motivated me to run, we've all, you know, I've kind of dedicated my life's work for sure the last 10 years, and really for the 27 years I've been doing what I'm doing as it relates to pastoral care and pastoral ministry, is really serving the community, how we can partner and reach across, you know, communities and families, and help do our part to adopt and embrace, you know, those who need help. And so that's kind of been my life's work. So, you know, incremental steps to get here, honestly. So being on the, you know, we've done plenty of adoption things with local schools like Maryland Avenue Elementary and other, you know, schools in the area. But Henry, what we've done too is, you know, we try to ingratiate ourselves in the culture. It's not necessary for a pastor to live in the community that he pastors in, but I think it is very helpful. So there's intentionality why we live in La Mesa, why our church is here, why we do everything pretty much here in this city. So as to the why, I was, you know, already serving on the Personnel Appeals Board. This is actually my second commission. I think I'm year five of my time serving on the Personnel Appeals Board, which has been a great experience for me. And on top of that, you know, there's been opportunity for me to get further involved. We started an initiative about 2 years ago called Serve La Mesa. It's really an initiative by our church that does a lot of mobile type service. For example, we're a part of the August movie in the park at MacArthur Park for the city. And we're a part of the next one. And what we do is we bring on a mobile trailer, and our church provides, really at no cost, cotton candy, snow cones, popcorn, all that kind of stuff. So it's just really a way to give back. And that's kind of been our passion, our driving force. Then, you know, rewind a little bit to about May of 2020. We all know, we're very familiar with what happened in our city with the riots happening in downtown. And I was, I say sadly privileged, but I was still privileged, sad under the circumstances, Henry, but I was privileged to be brought in as a faith leader with the chief of police at that time. And he had called us in. Obviously, you know, we're right on the heels, you know, 48 hours removed from, you know, the fires and some of the other things that were going on. You know, our church bank, Chase Bank, burned to the ground. Union Bank burned to the ground. I was watching on Facebook Live, about 25,000 watchers, Henry, while I'm, you know, and in my home here, I was sitting in this chair actually, and watching this fire at the Randall Lamb building, which is, I could see my office. I have an office in downtown. My office is in the back. I could see my office, and I'm, you know, thinking about my life's library, my books, and I'm realizing this is just stuff. This doesn't matter. This is just stuff. Everything else that's going on is far more serious. So something began that I think stir. I've been thinking about this opportunity to run for city council about 15 years ago. Wasn't in a rush, wasn't in a hurry. If it never happened, I was okay too. But I'd always been kind of thinking about it, even praying about it from a faith perspective on my part. And so those moments at the police headquarters where the chief brought us in, and I'm there in police headquarters. The chief really just asked if we would come there as support and kind of spiritual guidance at that time. And when he would go out, we would go out. So we would be there in headquarters. And when the BLM friends were over here on this side of the street, we would go out with him and greet them and talk to the crowd. When the Defend East County folks were on by the American Legion Hall, we would go on that side. And then we would come back in, you know, and reconvene. And I'll never forget this, Henry. I remember being there, you know, this is late May 2020. And I'm in the police, the chief of police's headquarters, his conference room, actually. And I'm at the end of the conference table, and the chief's at the other end. And right behind him, so about 15 feet away from me, is a National Guard with an automatic rifle on the balcony of police headquarters. And I'm sitting here like, we always say the word surreal is kind of a overused word when we don't know what to say, but it was like the surreal moment of like, what is going on? You know, La Mesa, Jewel of the Hills, this little, you know, tucked away. You know, Henry, I encounter people all the time, you know, people not from La Mesa that do not know where La Mesa is at, that have never heard from San Diego, that do not know where La Mesa is at. And now all of a sudden, La Mesa finds itself literally in the crosshairs of social unrest. Some of the things that were happening at that time that were quite the challenge that we all are well aware of. And I'm literally sitting there going, this is happening in our city. And so I think something at that time, Henry, began to stir inside of me that I need to do more. You know, I really value my civic responsibility, whether volunteer or otherwise, I value that. And that's probably where the fire started burning a little more about two and a half years ago. And then the opportunity presented itself. You know, my friend Laura Lothian, she ran last year for the unexpired term of Dr. Akilah Weber, and Laura won. And then, so she is now running for her, now would be her first full term. And so Bill Baber announced his retirement in, I believe, January of this year. And it really opened the door. It paved the way for me to say yes to running for the second open seat. So that's kind of where I find myself right now. Maybe a little too much share there, but a little bit of the backstory of kind of how I got here.
Exactly what I asked. So thank you for sharing all of that. That was very kind of you. I went through your website and I looked at some of your issues and priorities that you were running on. And one of them is keeping the community safe. And on your website, you write, on May 30th, as you alluded to the riots, We saw people riot and burn parts of La Mesa to the ground, businesses destroyed, livelihoods lost, and the community divided. I never want that to happen to La Mesa or anywhere else ever again. I'll stand tall with our law enforcement personnel. Well, some people would say that the actions of the law enforcement contributed to the riot. What do you see as the causes of the riots of May 30th?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Henry, that has probably a number of answers. I back to the conversation we were having prior, you know, I got a little bit more, not an insider's view, but I got a different perspective being inside police headquarters. I think a couple things were at play here. You know, we have a great city that's really, there's not too much crime. There's still crime in any city, but really we have a great police force that I think has done a wonderful job. I don't think anyone expected what happened. And honestly, I don't think anyone was prepared for what was to follow. And so there's been criticism for sure, looking back, of police could have done more. Why didn't they step in? And there were a lot of reasons that I don't want to get into, because I don't know. I don't have the sources cited to really say why they weren't there. Why did they allow the buildings to burn down? Why do we ever, you know, get to that place? But you know, my hope is that we never have to face that again. That was such a tragic moment. And this is where I'm not only a supporter of law enforcement just in general, prior and even currently, but I'm a fan of, we need to bolster up what we do have. And even, you know, they've had a challenge even hiring more people since COVID and since some of the challenges that arose out of the riot, at post riots of May of 2020. So that's a really tough thing to say of what happened and why and who was to blame. I wouldn't speak on behalf of him, but I can speak of hearing the heart of the chief at the time, the now retired chief. He was devastated. He was devastated by what happened, but I know he was doing everything in his power he could to be able to keep our city safe, to be able to prevent anything further from happening, which it was already, you know, already out of control at the Vaughn Shopping Center. You know, the Playing and Sports and that whole shopping center really got looted and somewhat demolished. And the other buildings I already mentioned that actually got burned to the ground. So I know there was great devastation. And I also know this too, that all the other officers, because I have a relationship with some of the officers as well, some of the PTSD and the weight that has been on them even since then has been very challenging for them. That, yes, it happened on our watch. It happened on La Mesa's watch. And we had other things that ensued after that. And obviously, you know, we're not going to sweep under the rug why this happened. You know, we had an incident at a trolley stop, which is very well documented, that happened. And I don't quote me on it, Henry, but within, I want to say, 48 to 72 hours of the George Floyd incident, which was national news. And now all of a sudden we have an altercation with a young Black man, an officer, at a trolley stop. And it was like, America's at a fever pitch at this point anyway. We're all in lockdown. COVID has got everyone really cabin crazy, right? We're all going through cabin fever right now. People are wanting something to do and get out. There's anger, there's pain, there's this racial unrest, this social unrest that's happening. And like I said, I felt like sadly La Mesa got caught in this perfect storm of what became national news and a similar incident, not in kind, but yet similar with the racial tension. And that, I believe, that just escalated to a point where that's when it all started. And so now we find ourselves 48 hours, 72 hours later, dealing with the after effects of those coming in and really storming the city.
Yeah. After those events, we went into a 2-year lockdown. We're kind of coming out of it. How do you see La Mesa after the riots and 2 years of the lockdown and coming out of the pandemic? You know, there was a citizens oversight committee. What do you think? Has the police been reformed? Do they need to be reformed? How is it doing? Does it need to be more?
Yeah. And I wasn't a part of I'm familiar with the police oversight board. I know that was created, I believe, for accountability and other things like that. And I don't believe there was need for reform. I believe what happens is, in times like this, and I would just say this is just my opinion, and I'm not putting this on anyone else, but I think there are some officers, and we talked about this at police headquarters. Unfortunately, out of a quality, huge, broad stroke of officers all across this nation, men and women alike, who serve law enforcement, there's really only a small percentage who are not nice people, who have malicious intent, or who have racial, you know, bias or something else a part of who they are. Unfortunately, those things happen and have happened, and that's what we see brought to the forefront. And when it comes to our city, that wasn't the case. And I don't know that there was reform necessary. Now, I know there has been awareness. You know, it's like, I would equate it like this. Whenever, when Jack in the Box years ago had an E. coli outbreak, which was a major deal, they almost folded as a franchise. After all that, Jack in the Box was probably the safest place to eat anywhere because they had gone through extra measures to make sure that they were the safest place to eat. And I would say that the same about our law enforcement. You know, one incident does not define an entire culture, which is our law enforcement. And moving forward, they have picked up the pieces. They have, you know, they've lost officers, you know, as many law enforcement across this nation has had officers retire early, get out of law enforcement, take an early retirement, like I said. But I think they have really bounced back and been resilient and proven that they can overcome something that really unfortunately put many officers in a light that shouldn't have been brought upon them because it wasn't their actions that led us here. So all that said, I hope that makes, you know, somewhat sense. But to even answer like the second part of your question there too, Henry, is how has La Mesa kind of recovered? I believe it's taken time. Some businesses obviously did not make it. You know, COVID had nothing to do with the riots, but COVID, you know, really decimated some of our business. You know, in my travels in the last 6 months, really since formally announced my campaign for La Mesa City Council, I've been talking to small business owners, and they absolutely got hammered over COVID. You know, whether it was hair salons, I know the owner Gary of Wolf and Sparrow Salon right there on Jackson. And I know other small business owners, you know, in the village, and they just absolutely, you know, because they were not able to meet. You know, Bobo's was shut down for like 6 months. You couldn't even really. It was even, you know, conversation about them not even reopening at that time. So now to bounce back, and now, you know, here's what we're dealing with now, post COVID. Well, we say we're in this post COVID culture. I hope we are in this post COVID culture. Presuming that's the case, we're dealing with the effects of what COVID produced, whether it was loss of revenue, having to pay back stimulus, you know, or you know, loan money or whatever, or just trying to build back clientele. And then we're in a state of inflation right now, which now let's just say restaurants alone, they're having to charge way more than they ever did before. So, and people are making decisions, go, hey, a family of four. So I have two kids, my wife, and we have two kids. Henry, if we want to go to just middle of the road, like a California Pizza Kitchen or a Chili's or what, it's $80 to $100 for a family of four to eat out. So you're making decisions to not go eat out, which affects the revenue of the local business, which affects the taxes those businesses give back to the city. So it becomes cyclical and it all comes back around. So do I think we're at a good place? Yes, I do. I think we're better than where we were 2 years ago. I hope these businesses can continue to make progress. And we want, I think I said this at the community forum here that was held on October 5th. I hope that we would be a destination spot, that La Mesa would be a place where you want to come start a business. You would want to come, you know, launch a new endeavor or start a restaurant, you know, here in the city because of the vibe we have and the people that come and the sense of community and the amount of life that takes place on a Friday night or a weekend in the downtown village. So that would be my hope. But yeah, there's, you know, we have stumbled out of COVID, all of us, right? And now we're at this reality check of where do we go from here? And businesses that can be resilient and bounce back are finding a way to pivot and move to whatever is different and new. They're finding creative ways to how they offer their services. I know coffee shops were just selling coffee by the pound out of the windows and not even opening and doing other creative things just to stay afloat, to get to here, to now start 2.0 of their business, you know, now in this post-COVID culture.
Yeah, we are just trying to figure out how to re-put the pieces back together. And La Mesa is a little unique because we went into the COVID pandemic fragmented because of the riots. But one of the first public events in La Mesa was the Juneteenth event. Did you attend that event?
You know, I didn't. I don't know that I was invited or no, I shouldn't say I was invited. I didn't. I wasn't made aware of the event. If I was invited, I would absolutely attend. I wasn't aware of it. It was this year, right? Was the first year was this year?
Yeah.
I was not able to attend. I didn't know about it.
You mentioned also in terms in your keeping the community safe that you support law enforcement to clean up the streets. What do you mean by clean up the streets?
Yeah, and that's kind of a broad term, you know, Henry, also I'll make it more specific. And I didn't get a chance to say this at the community forum because we had 90 seconds to respond on the homeless issue. We can't expect law enforcement to go beyond what they are trained to do. Our law enforcement are trained to be able to fight crime and to be able to enforce the law. That is their job. What we have not, now grant, there are programs connected to law enforcement that are able to do what I'm about to say, but what they're not equipped to do is deal with drug addiction or any kind of life-controlling addiction or mental illness. And so some of the encounters that unfortunately they have, it's all three are needed: the enforcement of crime and be able to deal with some of the life-controlling addiction and or mental illness. And I think I talked about, and I don't want to move too fast ahead either, but the homeless issue, which is really a crisis now in La Mesa, it's no longer just an issue, it's a crisis, which crisis is another word for crossroads. We're at a crossroads. We have to do something. Otherwise, you know, so it's going to be, there's going to be a possible real negative outcome. And it's already negative right now. It's challenging right now. But law enforcement's idea that they would clean up the streets, you know, it's not their responsibility. You know, we got other programs that can help and assist. But, and with like the home program has been deployed by our city to help. And what's been told me, and there's two gentlemen, and they're really nice guys, and they are, you know, plainclothes gentlemen, which we have heard. And what's been told to me is that even if law enforcement comes with grace and a proper approach, there's still, when a homeless person sees an officer coming, what's the immediate thought? I'm in trouble. I've done something wrong. I've broken the law. I'm going to jail. So the home program comes as kind of a de-escalating, they kind of neutralize the situation, they come, and then they offer the services that they have at their disposal to get someone into a shelter, to get them into a clinic, or just help them get off the streets. So cleaning up the streets is a collaborative effort. It's not, we can't only put that, I probably should rephrase that on the website. We can't only put that on law enforcement. That's a civic responsibility for all of us. That's residents, that's police, that's the home program, that's other community efforts. And as I didn't get to share at the community forum, we have to partner with groups that are already doing things that we are not. La Mesa doesn't necessarily, not that we can't, we don't necessarily, Henry, have to start a center for life-controlling addiction. We don't necessarily have to start a clinic for those who battle mental illness. There are already, East County too, but even broader San Diego, there are places that we can, that whether it's nonprofit, where it really a little to no cost back to the city, where we can refer and get those the help needed without us feeling like we have to start something in order to see progress in that area. So I hope that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So I just wasn't sure what you meant, clean up the streets from graffiti or homeless. So I understood that to be homeless. You know, there is a court decision that says you can't clear homeless camps from the streets, from public areas, unless there's a shelter, and La Mesa doesn't have a shelter. So how does La Mesa clean the streets of homeless if it doesn't even have a shelter to send them to?
Yeah, that's a great question. I need to become more familiar with that law. I didn't know that was the actual law. Now, what I would probably follow that up and say, does that mean that in order for us to break up an encampment, we would have to have a shelter in La Mesa city limits, 91941 or 42, or we have to have an open shelter where we could bring them that's in proximity to East County? I don't know that. If the answer is yes, we can send them to anywhere that's an organized, maybe vetted or approved shelter, then I would say that's what's going to help. The problem is we have this cycle, and I will just share it really quickly. You know, we have to, I think I said this, we're asking the right questions about homelessness. We're just answering them really kind of in the improper and incorrect order. We need to ask the questions first. What are we dealing with? Because I think sometimes we come into something very ill-equipped to handle a situation based on our history, based on maybe our bias or just, you know, our inconvenience or the fact that I have a homeless guy, you know, in my front yard, you know, I feel unsafe. You know, all of those factors play into what we presume to be the best step moving forward. Well, I've identified through conversations with other friends who have had multiple dealings and long-term relationship with the homeless community, especially in El Cajon, that there are three types of homeless, Henry. There are those who are pre-homeless, which are often those who are, you know, recently lost a job, some other life transition that's kind of altered and shaken them, where now they're living in their car or a short-term kind of motel situation. A lot of them have gym memberships where they, you know, get up in the morning, go to the gym, take a shower. They have a lot of them hold down jobs. They go to work, they come back, and then they repeat the same thing over again. That's usually transitional. That is probably the best of the three that we have the chance to bring the most, I don't want to say reformation, the most transformation in a short period of time. Because all it may take is the right job or the right break. And we have, and I know this because of our partnerships with La Mesa Spring Valley Schools, we have families in our school districts right here in the city who are pre-homeless, who basically mom lives in a car. They have five kids, let's say. This is an actual situation. They have five kids. Mom lives in a car. One or two kids live with aunt and uncle. One or two other kids crashing on some friend's couch. And so you've now fragmented the family, but yet that is the situation they find themselves. They are pre-homeless. Then the second phase is those who are newly homeless, those who have found themselves past the pre-homeless phase. And usually these are the unsheltered friends that we see who have a shopping cart with their entire life's belongings with them, right? Stacked, you know, with sidewalls, you know, whether it's a guitar, you know, all their life's possessions are in the shopping cart. And sometimes, you know, addiction kind of follows, you know, maybe is the entryway to that phase. And this is what I found too. I wouldn't throw a percentage out, but I do know this. And if we have time, I can share with you a story about my personal interaction with the homeless community, because we've had, you know, multiple homeless be a part of our church and like that. So there's that middle ground of newly homeless. Then the last part, which is the most sad, Henry, and devastating part of the three, you know, whether pre-homeless, newly homeless, is chronically homeless. And chronically homeless, sadly, we sometimes have to love them until death. We sadly have to walk a journey with them where they do not want help. And most of the time, the chronically homeless are usually connected to some kind of life-controlling addiction and often mental illness, and unfortunately and sadly, sometimes both. And there is no reasoning. There is no, you know, as far as negotiating with someone who is, I don't like to say the word crazy, but someone who's not in their right mind. There's no way to negotiate around that. So that is the hardest part. So what I would say is, you know, I think home program or the census that was taken says La Mesa has like 30 homeless. They've identified about 30 homeless. I tend to think it's a little more. I'm not saying this inaccurate. I'm just saying what I see, I would think it's a little more. It's probably a number that flexes up and down depending on the week and the month. But I would say that we have quite a few chronically homeless who are really, you know, they're devastated by their circumstances. Who knows how long they've been like that. And really it's a challenge for them to get out. So what I've seen, this is the hard part. This is the hard part from my, and this is where I would say, like, you know, if you ask me, what are we going to do about the homeless? Well, we have to lead with compassion. They're humans. They had a mother and a father at some point that loved them and cared for them. And some life event, whatever the circumstances were that led, they're still human. And I said this, you know, at the forum, we have to understand that there's inherently all human life is valuable. So we lead with compassion, which means sometimes we get them a meal, or sometimes we get them, our church just made some little, they're like unsheltered care kits, where like a toothbrush, a pair of socks, bar of soap, like a protein bar and a water, you know, just a real simple thing, because sometimes we don't always know how to respond. But what I found is sometimes, Henry, that becomes a Band-Aid and we're really not helping them. And because there's not that final step of reformation where it's, I'm going to get past my circumstance and get the proper help, get on the right medication so I can help fight the mental illness, get to a program that's going to help me fight my life controlling addiction. And so I've seen that. So that's the issue that we face, because the high percentage, I believe, are somewhere on the spectrum between newly homeless and chronically homeless. It creates a far more issue, which really comes back to cleaning up the streets, which I would not put all on law enforcement. That's a city issue. That's a city government issue. And back to the cyclical effect, the homeless population, on our doorstep of our church and on the doorstep of businesses affects consumers, affects clientele, affects parishioners. It doesn't mean we turn them away, but we want businesses to thrive. Businesses can't thrive if there's a homeless person camped there and they have defecated or something else on their front doorstep before, while customers are walking. It just can't happen. So that's kind of the broad stroke. I did not get to share that the forum because that was obviously longer than 90 seconds. So I hope that gives you a sense of kind of where my mind and heart is at.
If you mentioned the law enforcement can't clean up the streets, who would do it and where would you clean them to?
Yeah, and back to that's a great question. So law enforcement can only do so much. I mean, they can only do so much, which is if there's a crime. They can't help someone who, like I said, dealing with addiction or dealing with mental illness. So this puts it back on us to find a way that, you know, there's been a lot of ideas and different ways to, you know, shelter them or whatever. And I think what it comes down to is we have to identify or come to grips with the reality that some just don't want help. And that's going to create the perpetual problem. If everyone on the streets wanted help and now I think at the core, Henry, everyone would, if you pulled every homeless person who was able to you know, craft an answer back to you and with a clear, you know, answer, say, no, I really don't want to be homeless. I think they all would probably say that at the core. But let me talk to you about Matthew T. I won't share with you his last name because I've known him for 9 years. Matthew T. is a chronically homeless young man here in La Mesa. He lives by my house here. He camps in the Little League dugout at Sunset Park. And Matthew T. is a very nice young man. He's a very educated young man. He's very intelligent. I've had some very deep conversations with him over the last 9 years, less than the last few years. I still have contact with him, but not as much as I did maybe, 5 to 7 years ago. And Matthew stumbled in the door of our church. And we embraced him. We brought him in as family. We you know, fed him. We were able to help him. We would buy him clothes. We bought him a sleeping bag. We would do whatever we could to help his situation. He was still homeless at that time. And we would, you know, he would buy him a sleeping bag and then he'd go back to Sunset Park and sleep in the dugout. Well, then we have a family in our church, Henry, that runs an actual boarding care for those who are disabled of any sort. And that family in our church they get paid by the state to do this. This is a business for them. They offered, said, you know, we want to bring Matthew in free of charge. And this family, Henry, so gracious of them. They helped him establish his SSI. They got him a cell phone. You know, he got cleaned up. Now he has a shower every day. He's got they have small dorms in this place in Spring Valley. And he's drinking coffee. These guys are drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes, hanging out with other people that are there. He's having a good time. Well, then sadly, the mental illness side of him got the best of him. And he called the police on himself when he was asked to take out the trash. Something as small as taking out the trash. He felt threatened and called the police on himself. And really, sadly, blew a great opportunity to get off the streets. And that was approximately 6 to 7 years ago that happened. And I've been in contact with Matthew's stepfather. Then he's gone to jail a few times in between. We've been there to get him out to jail. And, you know, now his stepfather asked me, Henry, like, so what next? It's like, well, if he stays on his medication, he's usually okay. Once he gets off his medication, it's sadly a different story. So Matthew now to this day, and I've seen him recently in the last week or so, he is back on the streets, as skinny as I've ever seen him, not healthy, not looking well. And my wife and I, you know, with grief in our hearts, because we have vested interest with him. It's just sad. It's just sad to see that this young man who has so much life, who has value, he has value to God, he has value to this community, he has value to our family, our church family, and he's living a life sadly isolated and alone. At the end of the day, he doesn't want help. And this is the same young man, Henry, that I drove through. He was in my truck. I've had him in my vehicle driving through the drive-through McDonald's on Fletcher Parkway, right by Costco. And he's super, hey, PT, thanks so much, man. Appreciate it. Thank you so much. This has really helped me. I said, Matthew, I don't think it is. You know, I said, buddy, this is just a Band-Aid. I'm not helping you. This is just a Band-Aid. And so that's probably my biggest concern is, yes, Henry, we can't put it on law enforcement. Yes, we're beyond an issue. We are at a crisis level. And honestly, I don't know what the 100% most authentic answer is for the absolute eradication of homelessness solution. I don't know what that is because of what I've just shared, that some don't want help. And, you know, what's the old saying? You can only, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but they got a drink, you know? And so I think that's where we're at right now, which is back on us still to figure out how we can partner. I think, you know, if I can, I want to do more research on the law about the encampments, because if we could break up some of the encampments and but yet send them to a resource, send them to a place, not totally, you know, abandon them and say, you got to get out of here. You know, you're we have let homeless camp out at our church, and our pastors have said, you can stay here, just clean up after you clean up when you leave. You know, we've actually allowed them to do this, which in some ways probably hasn't helped them either. It kind of continues to foster the idea that I don't need to get out of the situation because I have a nice little place to stay with shade. And, you know, I have a nice little bathroom here behind the marquee of the church sign. Hey, I'm okay. I'm good for the next couple of weeks until they're not good. And then they overstay their welcome because they do unfortunately leave trash. They do not clean up after themselves. They do not help the situation. So I feel bad that I really don't have an answer, but I know there's people far above mine and yours pay grade who haven't been able to figure it out. If you go to downtown San Diego right now, Henry, it is the worst I've ever seen it. And I go to a lot of Padres games, and you know where I'm talking about, down at East Village and out to Barrio Logan a little bit and some of the other surrounding areas. And it is absolutely rampant. But I said this at the forum, City La Mesa is now what San Diego was 15, 20 years ago. There was homeless 15, 20 years ago downtown. It's nowhere near what it is today. And my fear, if we don't do something, that say La Mesa 10, 15 years down the road will look like San Diego now. And that is a great concern, which is why I'm, you know, I want to be a part of the solution. I don't have an answer. I don't have a great answer. I have some ideas, but I really hope that we can figure this out so that we can help them and help foster a healthy community, business thriving, people thriving, helping our unsheltered friends. And it's a win-win. But right now we're at a crossroads.
Your next priority is supporting economic growth. And you mentioned you promised to provide businesses with the incentives and funding to help them through the years of hurt and pandemic and big government. What incentives and funding are you talking about, and where would the funding come from? Would that be an increase in taxes?
No, just the opposite. I mean, we're trying to fight, you know, our La Mesa victory team is trying to fight against more taxes. Because here's the thing, people, and I'll get to the question too, people are hurting right now. I mean, people are hurting at the pump. You know, I drive by Costco today here in La Mesa. The line's still up the door, but guess what? People still have to get gas, even if it's $6-$7 a gallon, whatever it is today, $6.79, $7. People are hurting. And I feel like we're adding layer upon layer of hurt. And if we tax, it's one more layer of hurt. If we add more expense, it's one more layer. Like I said before, cost of living, inflation, gas. I will gladly share the mileage tax, which is off the table now with Sandig, but I'm sure it's a matter of time before it will be back on. That's why it's still an issue that myself and our La Mesa Victory team is fighting for. That's $600 a year per person. So my household will pay $1,200 a year for a gas tax on top, or mileage tax, excuse me, on top of the already high gas prices. So we have a hurt there. So we have to do whatever we can to foster over here. How do we foster growth, business development, growth of economy, wanting, like I said, La Mesa to be a destination for businesses to want to come in the land? How do we do that without raising taxes? Well, one thing to start with, and I don't want to speak for her because she is beyond well-spoken than myself, but Laura Lothian, who's actually a current sitting, you know, council member, has been given ad hoc to the ARPA funds. So the ARPA funds, don't quote me on it. I want to say it's like $6 to $8 million. And I think the project is called like Business Facade something, where they can get up to like $5,000 to help improve the facade of their business, part of their business. So that's a great first step that was really given to us. That's federal money that was granted to us. And now it's just, there's an application process. And I know that City Council has been dealing with that. I don't know how that's being vetted and decided, but businesses can apply for the ARPA funds, which helps. So that didn't come. I mean, everything always comes back to, well, if nothing's free, right? You know, I get these checks in the mail from my government. I'm going, okay, I'm gonna have to pay for this at some point in time, right? This is not free money for my kids, but this is not direct tax to us in La Mesa right now. We're not adding tax upon tax upon tax, layer upon layer upon people who are already hurting. Just trying, you know, I had a friend 2 days ago, Henry, tell me this. He said, and he's got a great job. He's a teacher. His wife is a stay-at-home mom. He's got twins and another, she's got three kids. He said for the first time, he said, our budget is in the red. And it's not that he's having to spend. Well, yeah, he's spending more. He's not living frivolously. He lives a very cash, cash budget lifestyle. He just can't afford to live here in San Diego with inflation, cost of living, gas prices, food prices. And which is why, it's not a revelation to anyone. I can't tell you how many of our friends in our circle have moved out of California, right? For these reasons, so we have to make it attractive to stay. We have to want businesses to thrive, and we got to figure out ways to do it without taxing our people. Cause that's not the way to do it. But I think we also have to cut our businesses a break. Some of the regulations, I won't get into them, Henry, but some of the regulations we've asked our businesses to do just put more pressure on existing stress and tension that they already have. And they're still coming out. Some of them are still paying off debt or trying to pay, because they still had to pay their employees. They still had to pay their, their insurance or their liability, their tax, other stuff over COVID. Some of them are still paying that off. I know businesses that were just on the brink, great thriving businesses that were on the brink. Had it not been for one thing, they would have shut down. So we have to do whatever we can. It's a delicate balance because some of these businesses are fragile right now. They're still on the brink. We're not out of the woods. We might be post-COVID. We're not out of the woods post-COVID culture with whether we're going to see businesses survive or not. So we got to do whatever we can to put some wind in their sails, help them out. Maybe it's not even financial. Maybe it's just other support the city could offer. Whether we get, teams of people helping them, clean up the streets. I went by after Oktoberfest. It was pretty messy down there. We can literally clean up the streets, not in a metaphorical sense, but an actual tangible, literal sense. We can get teams of people to do that. I know there's a lot of people that love this city that much. And I saw it after the riots, Henry. I saw the day after the riots. And the riots, I won't get into the political side of who was the perpetrators, but venture to say there was less La Mesa residents than you think at the riots. They were not residents of La Mesa by and large. But the next day, I went down there. The next day, we had residents all over East County. And I was up all night. I got down there a little late. And literally by 11 o'clock or noon, Henry, the entire thing was cleaned up. Windows were boarded up. Glass was swept up. Things were cleaned up by noon the next day, which says, and we see this in crisis. We saw after 9/11, a nation, bipartisan. It wasn't about a Republican, Democrat, Independent, Green. It didn't matter at that point. We were all Americans after 9/11, right? And you saw a nation rally. And I saw the same thing happen in La Mesa. So I think the same thing could happen with businesses. We rally around businesses and want to support them. It comes back to permits too. Sheldon's Coffee Shop, downtown La Mesa. They needed an awning. They have a beautiful little coffee shop there. They needed an awning. It was taking them months and months from the planning department to get them an awning just to cover, give their customers some shade. Once it got on the radar, got done up, and now their customers are happy. So we have to foster those kind of things to make them happen, help them, want to see them thrive. We should do whatever we can to help them thrive. And there's things that are under control that don't cost any money. Expediting a permit doesn't cost, we're already paying the planning department. They're qualified people. That's just expediting a process. That's helping them without us spending a dollar to pipe, money in their business. But it's helping their business because it's helping them operate in a way where their customers are happy, and happy customers keep on coming back.
Good. Tony, we're running out of time. I got a bunch more questions. So,
oh man, go ahead. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm talking too much.
That's okay. You also mentioned that the quote on your website, the city council must help businesses owners thrive and eliminate roadblocks to success. What are the kinds of roadblocks to success that the city council can eliminate? And back to my other questions, what kind of incentives can the city council give to promote business?
Yeah, so that's kind of a two-part question that there again comes back cyclical. I think we can promote a lot of things. I think we put less barriers. I think, like I said, these are things that don't cost us money. I don't want to get into all the details of what, but there's things regarding certain waste disposals that restaurants have to do now. And those just become cumbersome. Those become added things to them that in an already stressful environment. I think we can deregulate some of the requirements without saying, hey, do whatever you want. We can deregulate so some of these businesses can just operate how they were before. They weren't being regulated that way before COVID. We've kind of got this heavy hand right now and trying to do this and tax this and make sure you recycle this and do that. And so I think we could deregulate on some of the things we're asking of them to do. And back to some of the things that would help them thrive. I've had business owners tell me this. They don't feel safe walking down the streets after dark. So, well, if they don't feel safe, how are customers going to feel safe? So this, and part of this, back to the cycle, this comes back to homeless. You don't know if homeless are, Some people walk up in the morning at their business and a homeless person is sleeping on their doorstep of their place of employment, of their business. So it comes back to solve, because if we solve the homeless issue, then we're allowing businesses to thrive. And then, which means there's now more customers coming in, which means now there's more tax, there's more sales tax coming back to the city. And now we can fund some of the other stuff that we can't fund right now, because if businesses aren't generating the revenue, guess what? The city's not getting that money back in the sales tax. So like I said, it's this kind of vicious cycle. And if one of those roadblocks is in the way, it kind of halts the whole cycle from continuing back to thriving. And so I think whatever in my power, you know, as elected, whatever in my power I can do to help, you know, like I said, deregulate, foster business into places where they, like I said, it's not us giving them just free handout money. Like the ARPA funds are great, but other ways that we can just help them. And I think, you know, here's the thing too, Henry, I really have come to place and in this era, I would say, of political divide that we find ourselves in. You know, you probably see it, I see it on social media. Not as much now, but way more over COVID and way more around the last election. I can't disagree with someone without them disliking me, unfriending me, coming at, you know, I think what has to happen is we got to learn to have conversations. I have a lot of friends in my circle that I do not agree with and they don't agree with me, but we're friends because we can have conversation. And I know there's no prejudgment. There's no condemnation. There's nothing standing in the way of us coming to a place where we can say, you know, this is in marriage too, any relationship, you say, we're going to agree to disagree, right? But having the conversation is healthy. Saying, I'm not going to talk to you because you don't think like me, you don't act like me, you don't look like me, you don't believe like me, the conversation's over. We miss the chance to have a conversation. So part of this has to start with us sitting down with local business owners and going, how can we help? You know what I found, Henry, too, in our adoption of the schools, like we've adopted schools over the last decade. And we used to give schools what they thought they needed. So back to school time, you know, about a month ago, every year, you know, we're providing backpacks and, you know, school supplies for, you know, for teachers or whatever. And my wife, who works for La Mesa Spring Valley School District, she said, Tony, you know what? Ask the teachers. The teachers will tell you what they need. Because guess what? She said, you know, a ream of paper is a big deal for a teacher because teachers only have limited budgets. And guess what? When the budgets run out, those teachers are pulling that money out of their own pockets because they need those supplies. So teachers out of their own, on their own dime are funding those things. So the conversation changed for us with our adoption process. Instead of me telling you, Henry, you know, here's the gift. We know this is what you need, as opposed to, you know, why don't you tell us what you need? And so that opened the door for us. And now the principal would call me and go, hey, Tony, we have this young man. He, you know, his parents don't have a lot of money. His toes are coming out of his shoes. Can you help? Absolutely. What size is he? Bought him a pair of, you know, nice, you know, sneakers, bought him another pair of like more like casual dress shoes. That's simple. That's tangible because we knew we found a need and we met it. And so I think that's the thing we have to do. We have to have conversations. We have to sit down with these businesses and other area leaders and say, how can we help? What does it look like? And if it's cost of tax, then let's find a way to fundraise that. If it's something we can do in our power that doesn't cost any money, that's the low hanging fruit, Henry, right? Like the deregulation, that's something we can do right now. You know, helping someone, you know, flourish in a business by us helping them with something on their front doorstep or literally cleaning up the streets or helping have conversation about how we're going to rectify the homeless situation so they can have a clean doorstep, not encumbered by anyone, you know, blocking a customer from coming in. You know, we have to have those conversations. If we don't, then we're probably already behind the eight ball and we're not willing to change. But having the conversations is the first step toward reconciliation, reformation, and these businesses thriving down the road.
Just want to ask you one last thing.
Yes.
What are the most significant endorsements you'd like to share, and how can people find out more about your campaign and volunteer and donate to you?
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah, thank you for that, Henry. So my website is Tony for La Mesa. It's Tony ForLaMesa.com, and you can see what you've read there. Some of my key talking points. That would be a great way for you to get more in touch with me. I'm accessible. Text me, call me. I will answer any questions. I will do my best to.
And your endorsements?
And my endorsements. Yes, thank you. Endorsements are the Republican Party of San Diego, the Lincoln Club, San Diego County Gun Owners, and Pietro's Pizza. How about that in La Mesa?
Okay.
Other than that's it for right now. I know there's some others coming here shortly, but that's what I have right now. For small things matter. I want to hear what every resident has to say. Like, what? Hey, if there needs to be a speed bump in their neighborhood because there's children there and people are flying. I come out of a curve here at Lake Murray, out of my house, and I am fearing for my life because people are zipping around that corner at 55 miles an hour on Lake Murray Boulevard. Small things matter.
Tony, you've been very gracious with your time. Thank you for sharing so much of it. Thank you for your time.
Tony, thank you so much. Thank you for East County Magazine. I'm East County for life. I love East County. Thank you guys for what you do. I really appreciate it.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region. Please support KNSJ by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.
The Clean Water Act turns 50 years old this week, but parts of it are currently under attack in a case before the U.S. Supreme Court. The case could remove protections from some streams and wetlands, which would then make it easier and cheaper to pollute or even eliminate those waterways. Shantae Coleman, with the National Wildlife Federation, says the law was partially motivated by the 1969 Santa Barbara oil spill.
And many California cities, even large ones, had very limited sewage treatment. There weren't any federal controls on industrial pollution or oil spills, so many cities dumped largely untreated sewage into the Pacific Ocean or its coastal bays, and the federal government itself dumped 50,000 barrels of radioactive waste into the Pacific Ocean.
California has strict rules to protect water, but a new report from the National Wildlife Federation says the case, Sackett versus EPA, could allow factories, hog farms, and wastewater plants to pollute waters in other states that lack strong water quality protections. The report highlights the success in turning Monterey Bay from an ecological disaster caused by pollution and overfishing into a healthy ecosystem and thriving tourist destination, and credits the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. Coleman says few laws have ever had such a massive impact.
The Clean Water Act keeps 700 billion pounds of pollutants out of our waters annually and has slowed the rate of decline of wetland loss and doubled the number of waters that are safe for fishing and swimming.
The report also calls on Congress to do more to address agricultural runoff, which is the leading reason bodies of water across the U.S. do not meet water quality standards. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region. Please support KNSJ by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.